Your Shishmar eats shit.
Your Mickey Mouse is a big, stupid dope.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to The Rest is Confetti. I'm Macy.
And Courtney.
And this week we watched the 1985 movie Enemy Mine, directed by Wolfgang Peterson and starring Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr. And Ermigerd, Courtney, tell me your thoughts. Or actually, synopsize that and then give me your thoughts.
I would be happy to synopsize that. During a long space war, the lives of two wounded enemies become dependent on their ability to forgive and to trust. And I loved it. I love this movie. This is one of the best ones, especially, I think, biggest surprises. I didn't really know what to expect going in, but it's great.
Yeah, so Courtney hadn't seen this before, so she didn't really have a history with this movie. I have a bit of a history with this. Similar to Frankenhooker, only I didn't... It wasn't something I shouldn't have been watching that I watched, like with Frankenhooker.
Yeah.
I do think I was a little young at 5 to start watching this movie, because there's some kind of scary parts and some, like, gruesome deaths. But it's not too bad, especially considering some of the other stuff I watched when I was 5. But anyway, my parents were great parents. They just were a little lax on their what I was allowed to watch. So anyway, but was my grandma had it taped on VHS, and it was the only movie she had at her house. So she had, like, cable and stuff. But this was the only movie she had at her house besides Chevy Chase's Funny Farm. And
I
didn't want to watch. Yeah, I didn't want to watch Funny Farm.
No.
And I did once, and I didn't like it. It probably went over my head. I don't know. I haven't revisited it, and I probably won't. But this was the only movie my grandma had at her house, and I watched it all the damn time.
I get it.
From 5 years old to probably like 10 or 11 years old, I wore out the VHS tape. And then I never watched it again after that period of my life. And I've always thought about it because it's very impactful. And then when we started this podcast, I was like, I never hear anyone talk about the movie Enemy Mine. And I also thought it was actually called Enemy of Mine, because grandma wrote Enemy Mine on the tape. And I had the visualization, the picture, photographic memory. That's what I'm looking for. Of the VHS tape saying Enemy Mine. And I always thought she forgot to write the word of. And so when I Googled it, I was like, oh, grandma got it right. It was Enemy Mine. And it's like, yeah, that's some weird sci-fi movie from the 80s. We'll cover that on the podcast, and it'll be a good time. It'll be funny. And oh my gosh.
My feels. The feels that I felt watching this movie, I did not expect at all. Especially, and I know it's ignorant to, base any expectation on just, the cover poster or whatever, but oh my god, no, I thought this, like you said, would be kind of funny, or maybe, campy and outdated or something. Mm-hmm. It would be cheesy, but no, it hit home, and I cried.
Yeah, I teared up a few times. I was like, oh my gosh. And this one I've not read. It's based on a book. I've not read the book for this one. I try to read the books for the things that we are covering if I haven't already, but this one I didn't. But I'm really anxious to read the book now.
Oh, yeah. I need to know more.
For anyone who is unfamiliar with the director, Wolfgang Peterson, he did Neverending Story and Troy. He's done other stuff too, but those are the two that are big in my life because Troy is perfect. I don't care what anyone says.
Visually stunning.
I love that movie. Oh, it's so good. Oh, Troy. And Neverending Story, I mean, we're 80s and 90s babies, so that's like our childhood.
And it was good enough for Stranger Things, so come on.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, my door just creaked. Ghost. I record in a closet in the basement, and my sump pump's running in the background, so I'm sorry if you can hear that. I call it my studio. It's not. It's a closet.
But it's a big closet.
It's a big closet. It's too small to be a room, too big to be a closet. So yep. It's Macy's studio. So, yeah, the two main stars in this movie are Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr. There is a kid who plays Zamis. Sometimes they say Zamis, sometimes they say Zamis.
Or Zamis.
Stuff like that. Yeah, it kind of depends. Yeah. It depends on what mood Dennis is in that day.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Han Solo in Star Wars. Sometimes it's Han, sometimes it's Han, sometimes it's Leia, sometimes it's Leia. Right, exactly. It had a $40 million budget. It was originally supposed to be $17 million, but they had a director who shot actually a lot of stuff in Iceland with Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr. It's Louis, right? Not Louis?
I'm not sure. I don't know, honestly.
I didn't look up the actual It's going to be Louis in this podcast.
It's going to be Louis. And if it's Louis, we apologize.
I'm sorry. Yeah. My bad. It's my fault. I'll take it. And that director got fired. They wanted to scrap the movie, but the studio wanted to make Aliens and a couple other things. It doesn't matter. Aliens, okay? Aliens, mm-hmm. The best movie ever made. They wanted to make that. And if they scrapped this film, they were going to have to pay the two actors anyway. So they decided to go ahead and make it. And I'm so glad that they did.
Absolutely. It's so magical feeling. That's what, like, when I read that the guy who did The Neverending Story and, like, Das Boot did it, I was like, oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, I can totally see that.
Right. All right, so I have just a couple little trivia facts, and then we'll get into the discussion of the actual film. Yes. This was cool. The Drac language was created from scratch, but much of it was Russian, but pronounced in reverse.
Ooh, wow.
So, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Difficult, probably. That's impressive.
Yeah. It took 4 hours to apply the makeup, which I think is impressive, because that's full-body makeup.
Right?
So 4 hours.
Because, like, even, I think that's how much it took, like, the Hobbits to get in their makeup in Lord of the Rings. And I'm like, I know right. They had a couple things, but still, that just seems really quick, especially for that time period. So good on the makeup people.
Yeah, and this is a 1985 sci-fi film, and it looks like a 1985 sci-fi film, but
we're a good saying one.
Right, we're saying that in 2020, so, you know, we give it a little grace.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's see if there's a couple other things here. We might have to, like, cut some of this out. What was the other one? There's several cuts of this film. There's some extended ones, and there's one that actually has a different name. And then, oh, yeah, so there's no mine in the book, like the original story, but the film executives thought that the audience would be confused by the name if there was not a mine in it.
They wouldn't understand it's my enemy.
Yes. He was my enemy. He's not now. And it's like, oh yeah, this is for Americans, so we need to put a mine in it. Which actually makes less sense, because the mine isn't your enemy.
Like, no. What? It's very confusing.
Yeah, no. It was filmed in West Germany and a little bit in Morocco. David Lynch was considered to be the director of this film.
Cool, that would have been crazy.
That would have been... I don't even know what that would... I don't know.
Right, he's kind of hit or miss with me. I appreciate the visions that he has for movies and stuff, and lots of respect for that, but yeah, sometimes it's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, he is for a very specific audience, and I don't think it would have served this story well.
No.
So,
because this is way more about, like, character development and stuff, I feel.
Yeah. I feel like someone came to the future and then went back and wrote the book for this, because it's... Courtney and I both said, I said when we logged on to our FaceTime, because social distancing, and I said this movie was so far ahead of its time, and she said that she wrote the exact same thing in her notes, so...
Because we share a brain sometimes.
Yes, we do. Get out my head. No, I like it there. It's nice and cozy.
It's nice and cozy. There's gothic stuff everywhere.
Yeah. And weird Frankenhooker posters.
And Frankenhooker posters as far as the eye can see. It's okay, I'm gonna get you back with Evil Dead. I can't wait for that
one. Yes, I'm so excited.
But yeah, this one, oh my gosh, this was just it was very delightful. Despite the fact that it gets sad and heavy at some points, I really did feel like this was a very magical kind of film.
Yeah, it was. And watching it, whenever there was something that I'm like, oh, that doesn't look great, or oh, that's kind of cheesy. It's like, but for 1985, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So anything in this movie, at least in my opinion, that, you know, that's not great, it's just because of age.
Yeah.
And that's inevitable.
Yeah, I think most of it holds up pretty well, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be blasphemous here for a second. And Lord of the Rings is still the greatest thing that has ever been made and will ever be made. There's a couple parts with Gollum where he looks a little rubbery.
Oh, absolutely.
The CGI the CGI hasn't, you know, completely held up over the last 20 years. That being mm-hmm. said, it's still amazing and perfect, and I love it. Oh, yeah. So.
But that just happens to all films. Like, that's like films from, you know, earlier 1910s, 1920s. I mean, they look so mm-hmm. weird and grainy, but for that time period, it was like, oh, this is magic.
Yes, moving pictures.
The moving pictures sure do take my breath away.
So I think, full disclosure, you cut out there, so I can only see your frozen laughing face, so I'm going to ha 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 and laugh along with you.
Even more amazing.
It'll just be a surprise when I edit this. I'll hear your audio.
No. That's too good.
That happens once in a while, and then when I'm like, oh, I missed something profound, I have to let you know that I missed it.
Damn, it's okay, computer. Nothing profound there.
This wouldn't happen if we could be in the same room.
I know. Hopefully soon. We got some ideas, so hopefully soon we can maybe do at least like an every other week and be safely social distanced, but still be in the same room, so this is less difficult.
Or we could try recording outside and do one episode, and if people are like, we can hear cars driving in the background, fuck you. We'll be like, sorry, we'll go back inside.
Fuck you, buddy. I feel like your house, like, we'll just go out in the middle of the field, which won't be creepy at all.
Right. Under a full moon.
Yes. Magic.
All right. So let's get into our visuals discussion of this movie.
Yes.
Like I said, it's 1985 sci-fi, but it reminded me, first of all, I got so much nostalgia. One, from growing up with the specific movie, but just the way it was made. It's just like, it reminded me of Battlestar, the original Battlestar Galactica. The original Star Trek, I got a lot of vibes, like, for that, the scenes on the planet and stuff. So, what some of your thoughts?
I just, well, here on The Rest is Confetti, we really love practical effects, as some of you may know already. And I feel like this did practical effects so well.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's not really a lot of need for any computer animated to begin with. I think maybe in the beginning, probably the space station stuff is about, I think, the only time you see that. But, oh my gosh, his makeup. I could go on for like an hour about the Drax makeup and look and the fact that there's no editing for his voice. That's all him. He's just like gurgling saliva. Mm-hmm. And I love the practical effects. I figured you probably would too.
Yeah, he does all the voice sound effects and everything on his own. Like, he does them at conventions and stuff when he goes. And I was watching an interview with him, and he was, first of all, they asked, so what made you take this role? And he said everyone else turned it down. He was like, no one wanted to be in this movie, which I can understand. Yeah, like, it's weird. It's a weird movie. And it's a lot of makeup, and you don't see anybody's face.
Mm-hmm.
But then he also said to, like, get the feel for how Jerry would move.
It's Jerry.
He did ballet and gymnastics every day and walked completely flat on his feet, but, like, also trying to move very ethereal, like, that sort of thing.
Wow.
And I watched the interview before watching the movie, and I could really tell, and I thought that was so cool.
That's very impressive and committed. Yeah, because I was looking at his discography and stuff. And he has won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor and An Officer and a Gentleman, and I was not surprised because they're both great. This might be my favorite Dennis Quaid role, honestly, because I know this is blasphemous, but I've never seen Innerspace before. I'm going to, but I've never seen Innerspace.
So we'll watch it together. I grew up on that one, too.
Yeah, so far, this is probably my favorite Dennis Quaid role. And, but man, yeah, Louis or Lewis, he just blew me away. I was shocked that the contacts, like, I saw his contacts mm-hmm. in his eyes and figured it might take away a little bit from the emotion he could bring to it. It did not at all. No. I was sobbing all of it. So, yeah, I can't say enough nice things about that.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, I love Dragonheart. That was one of my favorite movies growing up.
Yeah.
I think I like Dennis Quaid in this one even more. I think Dragonheart it holds up a little bit better, but it's a newer movie. It's more recent.
Yeah.
You know, mid-90s.
Oh, yeah.
Although it does have that 90s medieval, some people have English accents and some people don't sort of thing.
It was a weird time, the 90s.
And you're like, Dennis Quaid, aren't you supposed to be a knight of Camelot? Why do you have, like, a Midwestern accent?
They're just like, nah, no one will care about that.
Yep. Just like, I totally lost his name from Prince of Thieves.
Oh, man.
Kevin Costner.
There we go. I got it.
R.I.P. Alan Rickman.
Oh.
We miss you. Okay, I just brought it down. I'm sorry. All right, we're going to take a break so we can go cry for a while.
Yeah, BRB.
Always.
Always, Snape, always.
Okay, well, we're recording a little later than normal, so we're getting more off topic than normal.
Slap happy.
Oh, well. Yeah, the visuals are great. I really liked the planet. All the, like, smoke and fog around it, and yeah, I could tell that the rocks were styrofoam, but again, it was the 80s. I was into it. None of it took me out of the movie, and I really liked all the weird creature designs. I mean, all two of them. I guess there were only those two creatures on the entire planet.
Still, though, it was impressive.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell that the turtle was a little RC car that had the costume over the top, but I don't even care. It was great.
Right. Because it kind of added to the magicalness of the world, I feel.
Yeah. And that's a pro of being a sci-fi on a different planet is I can accept it because it's not like they tried to make it a real turtle from Earth. And I'm like, they don't move like that. This thing can move like that. I don't know. I've never been there. Never been to Farquaad 4 or whatever it was.
Farquaad. Some of you may die.
And that is a price I'm willing to pay.
Now and watch Shrek, man.
Well, we'll talk about Shrek and then we'll come back to this.
But yeah, I do. I think that all the visuals, I think they hold up just as much as they need to. Honestly, I don't think anything takes away from the story. It's just very, very pleasant surprise because I like I said before, I didn't really know what to expect going into this film, but no matter what it was, it exceeded my expectations by a lot.
Yeah. Well, and the story doesn't revolve around any of the, like, special or practical effects or anything. I mean, there is the little, not even a subplot, but the thing with the creature under the ground, which honestly, I think that was really well done.
It was. They kept it simple enough. I did. I appreciated that a lot.
Yeah, the big part of it that was under the sand kind of looked like the wolf from Neverending Story a little bit, like an alien version of it.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, it did.
And it reminded me of Tremors a little. I don't know if there was some inspiration there.
Yes, Tremors.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a masterpiece of cinema. Such a good movie.
We'll get to that one, guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know that Tremors was a blockbuster, but I have some fun facts about Tremors that I won't share here. I'll save it for Tremors.
Not enough people are talking about it right now, so that's why we're going to talk about it.
Right. So in our mind, and that means we're going to do it on here. But
yeah,
I thought that was really good, and it just the visuals didn't take me out, the ones that hadn't aged great, because it didn't matter. It wasn't about that. It wasn't about, oh, this visual, look at this, and oh, man, all these practical effects, and you won't believe it. It's not about that at all. They just needed a set for the story to take place.
It wasn't an epic like Star Wars, where you had multiple space battles, multiple space stations, all these characters. It's basically two characters carrying most of the film.
Yeah, it is. So then we move on to acting and directing discussion. Unless, did you have anything else you wanted to say about visuals
before? No, because acting is what I have the most written down on anyway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, real quick. This doesn't necessarily fall under visuals. I guess maybe acting, directing. One thing I noticed in this movie is right off the bat, there's really great diversity where they're flying around and there's two female pilots and one of them is a woman of color.
Oh my gosh, yeah, you're right.
I was very like, hey, yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it makes me sad that they're like, oh, surely by 2095 they'll have female pilots of color in space. But
that's a very reasonable expectation.
Yeah.
Sadly.
So, yeah, I thought that was really cool. It did suck when they're talking about the nurse, the white balloon lady, and he's like, hey, she's lost 20 pounds. I'm like, that seriously? You have a woman of color piloting, I don't think that's a word.
Pilating.
Oh, man, that would not be progressive if she was just in the background doing Pilates.
That would take us back 20 years.
Yeah. Be like, wait, what? Yeah. But a woman of color who is a fighter pilot, and then you're talking about how you can finally ask this nurse out because she lost 20 pounds, which that's not even that much. No. You know, even if she was 400 pounds overweight, that does not mean she is unworthy. But I've gained 20 pounds in quarantine.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's not that bad. Well, it is. But you know what I mean. You know what
I feel like that's weight that disperses pretty evenly to where most people would be like, well, I don't really notice it because, like, you haven't really gotten to the 50 mark, which right, like, exactly. is probably when you start to notice it.
I don't know. When you're barely 5'2", maybe 20 pounds looks more like 50.
That's true. Everybody's different, but it's okay because no matter what your weight is, you deserve love. And I do love that that guy's dying wish is like, please don't make fun of her anymore. Yeah. I liked her a lot. Oh my god, that was heartbreaking.
He's like, don't let the guys make fun of her. Don't let them call her the white balloon. It hurts her feelings. Duh! Yeah, that hurt my feelings.
The white balloon.
Courtney is the face of our podcast because she's tall and gorgeous and has all the nice model angular features and everything. So
yes, but Macy brings the beautiful little pixie spirit, so it's a nice balance.
Yes. I'm an angry little sprite that hovers around poking people.
In quarantine you are.
Right.
We all are.
Yes, so acting and directing. Directing I thought was fine. I don't really have notes on directing because I think that, again, the actors carried this movie. And I love Wolfgang Peterson films. I'm not really sure why, but he doesn't make great movies. He doesn't. I know he doesn't. But I like them for whatever reason. He's gotten lucky, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I know he's like the Guy Ritchie of the 80s.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Oh my gosh. Yeah, because there's that undefined, like, I know I keep calling it magical, but that's the closest way I can put it because that's what I think of when I think Neverending Story. It's like there is just this little endearing kind of, like, nostalgic magic to his films. Like you said, they don't have to be great. I just love them. That's my favorite sick movie. If I'm sick, I'm watching Neverending Story.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, so, but the acting. Oh my gosh, Courtney.
It is the driving force of this movie, seriously. I mean, these two actors really do carry it. And even then, when we switch out for the younger, for Yamis, or however you pronounce it, it's still just two people carrying the movie, basically.
Right.
I don't remember anything about any of the other guys, really.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was the pretty stereotypical bad guys with the bald spot and the ponytail.
Yeah, we didn't need character development for them. They were one-dimensional, and I was okay with it.
Yeah, it was fine. Oh my gosh, I know Dennis Quaid is a good actor, but I've never seen him, and I haven't seen all his movies, but I've never seen him in anything where I was like, oh my gosh, his acting, tour de force performance, Dennis Quaid. I mean, he's good, but this movie? Oh my gosh, he didn't even get nominated for an Oscar for this movie, and it made me really sad. Because it's a sci-fi. If it hadn't been a sci-fi, he would have, because he was fantastic.
Absolutely. Both of them were. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Everything felt so organic, which is, I feel, rare for the 80s.
yeah, the development of their friendship was, I felt pretty natural. It's not a terribly long movie. It's like an hour and 43 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
But even though the development happens fairly quickly, you know that there's time passing with Dennis Quaid's terrible wig. That was one of the worst wigs I've ever seen.
I couldn't believe the makeup did Louis Gossett so amazingly that I really was like, is that a person? But then, yeah, Dennis Quaid's beard was so fuzzy that I was like, I know that that's not even really, like, fake hair.
I feel like they just swept some pubes up off the floor and glued them to his face.
Straightened them a little and they were like, good to go.
And yeah, the wig was really, it wasn't quite as bad when it was longer. It was still bad because that was like they cut the fibers off of a broom and glued to his head. It was really bad.
One of my biggest critiques of the movie is I don't get how that was so bad compared to everything else being so good.
Maybe they ran out of time working on Jerry's makeup.
Maybe.
But it looks, oh, it must have been the same material that the little turtle thing was, because he had, like, little furry legs and stuff, and it looked very similar to Dennis Quaid's hair.
You just bought in bulk, save money, I get it.
Yeah, I get that. So other than that, though, so you can tell time is passing, and it, you know, that he wants to kill, I keep wanting to call him Draco because of Dragonheart.
Because he calls him Jerry, but then he's listed as Drac. So.
I know, that bothered me. No, his name is Jerry.
His name is Jereba. Jereba, a.k.a. Jerry.
Yeah. Next cat name is going to be Jereba, a.k.a. Jerry.
Yes.
But, yeah, where they try to kill each other, and Dennis Quaid tries to kill Jerry, and then Jerry saves his life, and all this stuff. And, you know, it makes sense. It starts out as I saved you, you owe me one, now you're my prisoner, and just organically, we're gonna die if we don't do this together.
Right, because also it is only the two of them on this planet, so they do, there is that kind of, I'm gonna go crazy if it's just me, so maybe I should befriend this person and open my mind up. And that's what happens. And it's beautiful and sincere and very impressive.
Jerry seemed less hateful towards the humans as opposed to Dennis Quaid's character, which, Will. His name is Will. Okay, that's what it was. Than Will was. So I think it was good that Jerry saved Will's life a few times before Will, like, returns the favor.
Yeah.
So it gave a few times, like, the creature in the pit. Which, that was scary. I forgot how tense that was.
I was anxious.
When we were introduced to that character in the very beginning, the little turtle thing falls in, and it sucks it down in and then shoots the shell out. That was great. But then there was a big belch, and I was like, okay, that was a little cheesy. That was probably the cheesiest part of the movie.
Very cheesy.
Yeah, Louis Gossett Jr. projecting his emotions through that makeup was phenomenal.
I just couldn't believe how much emotion he brought to it, and nothing seems forced. It seems really sincere, and it really does. It's so weirdly heartfelt. Like I said, one thing I did not expect at all was to feel a lot of deep emotions in this film, and I absolutely did, and I was thrilled, and also sad.
Yeah, because their relationship is so pure.
Mm-hmm.
It starts out as just necessity, and I'm lonely, and we're going to die if we don't work together, to mean they really genuinely care about each other.
Well, and they're talking about their family lineage, and he's, like, repeating it back to him. Oh, it was so heartbreaking and wonderful and beautiful. And when they're laughing together, when we find out that Jerry is pregnant because he is an asexual creature, so he just reproduces, and Dennis Quaid finds it entertaining, but is still obviously very supportive, and then... Mm-hmm. Oh, the death scene, though. I was not ready for the death scene.
Yeah, that was really sad. The belly wasn't the best in that it was kind of like an empty pillow. Like, it was a little smushy.
Right.
But other than that, the baby looked really weird and gross. That's probably my biggest criticism as far as the effects go.
The baby was you can tell that they knew it wasn't great either, because you only see it for one scene or so, and then he's immediately clearly a child in makeup.
Yeah. They were like, this thing has to grow really fast because we can't film this.
Because this baby looks super weird and fake. This it's like terrifying. The American Sniper baby, except it's an alien.
Oh, it's worse. Not as bad as the Twilight baby, though.
No. Okay. It's just too CGI.
Yeah. Sorry, Keith. But I did, they did put some forethought into it that I noticed he was really smooth. Because he couldn't have all those spines internally because it'd puncture the womb. So I'm like, oh, that, you know, there was some, like, thought process there and stuff. So that was cool.
Yeah.
I also loved that Will refers to Jerry as Zamas's parent. He doesn't say mom or dad. He says parent.
And refers to him as it.
Mm-hmm. He acknowledges that he isn't a male or a female. He, like you said, is asexual and reproduces, and even though he's being played by a male, like, it's, he's sexless, so he's a parent.
Mm-hmm. He's a parent, and a good parent. Yeah. He would have been a good parent. Sadly, mm-hmm. we don't get to see that, but.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I loved when they're talking about when Jerry is reading his little Bible, his Talmon.
Aww.
And he's describing some of it to Will. And Will's like, yeah, I've heard all this in our human Talmon, which is the Bible. And I love that Jerry goes, well, truth is truth. It's like, you guys aren't that different. You mm-hmm. are. I love their differences are, like, celebrated and respected because there are differences. You know, it's kind of like the people who are like, well, I don't even see color. Well, that's offensive because color should be an heritage and race is something to be celebrated and respected.
Exactly.
So there are differences, and those should be respected and celebrated. But then there's also things that aren't different. Like, we both, you know, believe in being kind and, like, loving other people and helping other people. And it's like, oh, yeah, you're not a monster because you believe literally the same thing that we do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you boil down the majority, not all, obviously, but the majority of the world's religions of all time, it usually boils down to the principle of just don't be an asshole. Be right. considerate, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's always the zealots who take it to the extreme and then are like, kill everyone.
Okay. Kill the, shun the non-believer.
Shun, build a bridge out of her.
Build a bridge out of her.
She turned me into a newt.
Oh, the better. Quotes of other movies are real today.
They are real. So we'll put this episode is Enemy Mine, subtext Shrek, subtext Dragonheart, subtext Monty Python.
That's why we're here.
Things. Yeah. So yeah, them talking about their lineage really got me, where it's the Drax obviously have this, like, big respect for their parents, because again, they're not moms or dads, they're parents. And it's really cool how Will is remembering his, and then Drac puts it in the context of the Drac lineage. You know, Dolores, waitress, maybe a waitress. Mm-hmm. And her grandpa was possibly a farmer.
Yeah, possibly a farmer. That. And he's so, and they're both so happy to share it. And that mm-hmm. is really what this movie focuses on, is just kind of getting over prejudices and finding some brotherhood and camaraderie, which... What a great message. Again, so ahead of its time, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the whole lineage thing was so symbolic. First, Jerry gives Will his Talmon necklace, which was really big.
Yeah, that's a huge respect thing.
Mm-hmm. And then Jerry talked about his lineage and asked Will to memorize it. And at that time, Jerry had no reason to think that he was going to die in childbirth. Because when I was little, I assumed... Just with my childish understanding, I thought they always die when they give birth. But upon viewing as an adult, it's like, oh, something went wrong. Because he's supposed to take his son to the council to say the heritage and stuff. So that's, mm-hmm. you know, that was a bad. So, yeah, the lineage and all that stuff and how when Drac was telling him the lineage and I want you to memorize this and I want you to learn my lineage. It wasn't because he knew he was going to die or anything. It was just important to him to share that with his brother.
Yeah. It was very heartwarming. And then all the more tragic when he did die in childbirth.
Oh, it was. And he's like, you have to take Zamas to the council, or, you know, what, I can't remember if he referred to it as a council, but whatever it was a council.
That's what it is.
And recite the lineage. And oh my gosh, I lost it at the end when Will takes him back and he recites the lineage, and then Willis Davidge was added to the line of Zhariba. And I was like, oh my God.
So many emotions all throughout this movie.
Oh gosh, because it's just so, we live in the Midwest, and I won't speak to where Courtney grew up because I didn't grow up there, but where I grew up, and I'm only saying this because none of my family listens to this podcast, and I'm not speaking specifically about my family, just the area is full of racist motherfuckers. So, white supremacists, the school that I went to, their mascot, and I was like in elementary school, so I did not participate in any of this stuff, because then I was homeschooled for a while. Surprise, surprise, the weirdo on the podcast was homeschooled. The mascot was, it was the Southern Rebels. Was the school, and the mascot was a Southern Rebel, like, Confederate soldier, and the school made national news because they did a fake lynching for one of their, like, spirit weeks. They, like, drug...
Oh my God, that's atrocious. Yeah,
they drug a, like, fake body, like, behind a truck and then burned it.
That's so dark. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And this was... I'm 27. Ew. This was in the late 90s, early 2000s, so... Yeah, nice. That sort of thing happened in my county. It's one of the smallest counties in Illinois. There's no one of color in that county. And as long as I had lived there, I've moved away since. There wasn't anyone of color as long as I was there, and there still isn't. And so this movie, like, really hit me on... I mean, it's about racism, essentially, you know.
Oh, yeah, all that racism, prejudice, stereotypes, yeah, all
being against people of different religions, being against people from different countries, different languages, different creeds, all that stuff. And so growing up surrounded by a lot of that stuff, it was just, oh, I want them all to watch this movie.
Right, because also way to name your mascot after the notorious losing sign.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah, we're gonna win. Oh, we've never won.
We've never won. We lose all the time.
Good, you deserve to lose all the time.
Oh, man. That's ridiculous. No, and I will say, I was very blessed to... Because I moved around a lot as a kid. I lived in Florida, like, I think I was 4 or 5. After that, I lived in North Carolina for a while. Then I moved to, like, way up in Ohio near Cleveland. And... North Carolina, I went to a big enough school. It was, I think, diverse, at least for probably that time period in being North Carolina. I would say that Ohio was very much, I mean, it's very diverse, the places where I live. So I do feel very blessed. I am very sorry that you had to be raised around that, because that must have been horrifying sometimes.
Yeah, I'm very grateful that I have since moved away. And I mean, even before I moved away, like, I knew, I was kind of like, this seems not okay. And again, my family did not participate in any of that stuff. There's a reason that I was homeschooled, because I was in that school district. So yeah, I call it the Bible.
That was very wise. Yeah,
I call that the Bible Belt of Illinois. So
yeah, which, the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
Every state's got one.
Yep. Now they're that school, because I don't say my school, because I do not want to be associated with it. That school's mascot is the Streaks, so enjoy that. You shit stains. I mean, it's an improvement to go from the Southern Rebels to the shit stains, so.
I'm glad it had a happy ending.
They have issues with people streaking across the fields during the games.
Okay, that's hilarious.
So they got theirs.
Amazing.
And I'm not making any of this up, you guys, at all.
Well, I believe it. I've seen Bible belts before.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. All right. So back to the movie. Anyway, that's why.
Back to the movie.
This movie really hit me, because I, like, really saw a lot of that awful prejudice firsthand. And it was really emotional to see what I feel like I've personally experienced. in being like, oh, this is not, no, they're people different than me are awesome. Like, there's amazing things to be learned. We should not lock them in cages and put up walls.
No.
It's like summer camp.
It is not.
Oh, so many tangents. Personal vendettas.
Yeah, we'll do a political podcast sometime.
Yeah, people need to hear our thoughts.
We don't want to alienate too many people.
Right after I go do a shot of Clorox.
Right. Although, if you're listening to us, I'm guessing you're probably not, like, a young Republican. Or if you are, you're a young reasonable Republican.
Yes.
Because my husband is what I like to call a reasonable Republican.
Yes.
Probably erring more now towards, like, a Nick Offerman, Ron Swanson type.
Oh, a libertarian. Yes.
People, and I should be able to do my shit, and you should be able to do your shit, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone and isn't prejudiced.
Yeah, I like to consider myself part of the reasonablest. That didn't come out right. Part of the reasonablest. Hail Zorp.
Hail Zorp.
Courtney, did you have any other thoughts for the acting and directing section before we move on to...
I did not. Awesome. It blew my mind. I think it's arguably the best part of the movie, and I think that the whole movie is great, so mm-hmm. I do. I was just blown away by how great for just a kind of... I'd never heard of this ever, except for after you said we were watching it, I was watching some old Family Guy, and there's a bit where it's just on a shelf, and I said it to Macy because I was so excited to see Enemy Mine anywhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I wish that this had a little more success at the time. I do feel like it has at least a cult respect now because I was looking at a lot of the reviews, and a lot of them are very, very mm-hmm. good and praise it for everything it deserves to be praised for. So I'm glad that it seems like now modern-day people have come around to it, which is what happens with movies that are ahead of their time. But,
yeah,
it is a shame that it was such a bomb mm-hmm. because I was kind of hoping it would be, like, a break-even thing, maybe, yeah. But 'twasn't, sadly.
People are not ready for this at all. I mean, no. There is, again, they're not a gay couple, but, you know, they have this really beautiful relationship. Dennis Quaid's character takes on a very maternal, caregiving role for Zamas. No. There's a man mm-hmm. that, I mean, yeah, again, Jerry's being played by a man, and you know, just for the sake of the argument, has a male voice and some male features and things like that. They're a little more male leaning species. They're male on the outside and female on the inside. And
there we go.
And
I can respect
he gives
it.
birth. He gets pregnant and gives birth. So there's a lot of, I mean, there's some hints of some trans stuff. I don't know if that was meant, if that was intended, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. All those things. And, yeah, people in 1985 were not ready for this at all.
Not at all. And, I mean, you think about it, even just being sci-fi cursed, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was just when Star Wars and Star Trek were really kind of beginning to hit their stride, at least as far as I know. And I do. I think it was kind of cursed to probably never do quite that well, especially considering its budget. But I'm glad that it seems to have a pretty nice cult following now, because it definitely deserves it.
Yeah. Well, and even Star Wars, I mean, that's not diverse and doesn't tackle any issues. I mean, when Luke comes to Leia and is like, I have a sister, she's probably like, oh, is it Mon Mothma? Because she's the only other woman in the galaxy, so it must be her. There's no...
Because they made Carrie Fisher very badass, but she is the only one until the newer movies come along.
Right.
So.
And then Lando is the only black person. I mean, with the new mm-hmm. when the new Star Wars movies came out in 2000, was it 17? Whenever.
Whenever
they started, people were like, oh, surely John Boyega's character is Lando's son because he's the only other black guy in the galaxy, apparently. So John Boyega has to be Lando's son because there's no other black people. Like, Star mm-hmm. Wars is not diverse. And, look, I like Star Wars, you guys, but it's not diverse at all.
It wasn't pushing those boundaries quite yet.
No. Yeah. And Star Trek,
they tried to make up for it in the newer ones, especially Rogue One. I feel like Rogue One is probably one of the most diverse ones, because we've got a person of Asian descent. I'm not sure exactly what he is, but I know he is of Asian descent. Mm-hmm. We've got an African-American, Oscar Isaac.
Yep.
Is maybe Spanish?
I think Hispanic, he's an Egyptian. I could be wrong.
Ooh,
on that.
That's even cooler.
But I think he might be.
But something. Yeah. It's very diverse.
Right.
And Rey is a really cool badass. Mm-hmm. So they did. I think they tried to make up for it, but you still have that whitewashing in the old ones.
Yeah. And the original Star Trek, I mean, there's a woman of color in the original Star Trek. Although Star Trek was the first mixed race on screen kiss.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's pretty
Star
cool,
Trek
at least.
Is better than Star Wars, okay, moving on. And
yeah. Also, I love the new Star Trek so much.
Oh, so good. Carl Urban for life.
Oh, Carl Urban and everything for life. We'll do a whole segment on just Carl Urban and how amazing he is.
Oh, yeah. And I'll just put a picture of Billy Butcher on my wall.
Yeah.
And stare at it.
Yeah, any fans of the boys out there are feeling us probably on we really want it to come back really soon.
Yes, I hope it does really soon. We were going to meet Jack Quaid 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago we were supposed to go. We had the hotel rented and everything. We had our outfits picked out. We were going to be the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood trio and meet Jack Quaid, and now we're being safe at staying home.
I know. I hope Jack Quaid comes back to whenever they reschedule it, which is supposed to be June, but that's not going to happen. So.
No, it's not. But maybe it'll be like, I don't want to get too hopeful. Maybe fall. Maybe we'll just wait till next year. But the nice thing is maybe he'll bring some more people with him. Maybe we could meet Carl Urban, too, because that would be a dream come true.
Yes. Oh, man. I want so badly to ask Jack Quaid to sign a poster and write, "You played my butt like jazz."
I feel like I would be surprised if he weren't, like, cool.
I mean, worst case scenario, his security escorts me out, and then that's a good story for the podcast.
It's a great story.
No, I just wanted him to write, "You played my butt like jazz," not actually "play my butt like jazz." Although that's fine, too.
He has my permission if he wants to.
It's fine.
But anyways, I digress.
Anyways, moving on.
Back to...
Our next section is the plot, but I feel like we always kind of cover the plot in the acting and directing.
Yeah.
The plot was great. That's all I have to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the only thing I had to say is there are some reviews that I do agree with a little bit, but there is a good reason for it, which is that the ending is maybe a little forced through, but that would be because they had to add the mine, because us dumb Americans wouldn't know enemy mine just is a cool way to say my enemy, so they needed an actual mine for the bad guy. Which, not a bad standoff point either. I mean, I thought that added some cool atmosphere, but I think that was my only critique, is I wanted a longer ending with him getting to the planet, which apparently in the original one, like with the other director, there is a longer scene where it shows him on the planet and doing whatever ceremony that they do, so missed out on that, but that's okay.
Yeah, I read about that too, and that would have been cool. Yeah, it was a little action-y, like, because this is not a big action-packed movie. I mean, there is a lot that happens, not just sitting and talking, but it's not this big action hero film, and the ending felt a little bit like that. But yeah, I think they were able to keep it smooth enough where I didn't question it too much while I was watching. I felt like a couple things dragged on a tiny bit at the end, but... Again, it's not a terribly long movie, so it didn't bother me. If this had been a 2.5-hour movie, I probably would have said, you could cut 30 minutes out of this, please.
Yes. But yeah, I do. I love the story. That. It's heartwarming. I think it's very relevant to the time, sadly. So I do. I think if you are a fan of sci-fi at all, you should probably check this one out.
Yeah, it has some good tense moments. Really emotional.
So emotional.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about when Will and Zamas are, like, talking about their differences. And, like, I'm a human and you're a drac and I want 5 fingers and you want 3. It was just, it was so sad and so emotional. And it was it was cool, too, because Will wasn't, like, shitting on humans.
No.
You know, it's not like, oh, I turned my back on my race. Yeah. He just had learned to, it doesn't have to be hateful. He had just learned to love and appreciate his friend. And I just thought that was really cool. I did love, too, when he was talking about how the Drac baby was ugly. He goes, but not any uglier than the pictures of the kids they passed around the mess hall.
That was a good adult joke.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. And just so sweet when the little montage of Zamas growing up.
Oh, yeah.
And him taking care of him.
Playing football.
They're like flying and they're going on a hike and he's wearing them on his back. The music reminded me a lot of Willow.
Yeah, that's right. I would agree. Like Willow with synthesizers a little bit. Because, I mean, it's space. You gotta have synthesizers.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, that was so sweet. Just their relationship. All the relationships in this were great.
Yeah, this is very character development kind of based, which I really appreciate.
Okay, so I think we're ready to rate the movie and then do a little, like, fix, maintenance, and recast for this one we had talked about doing. So, Courtney, what do you think our rating system should be?
Ooh, what could we do? I wish there were a name for the little green jello balls that he eats. I think they're called, like, ration balls, which sounds ridiculous, but...
ration balls. Let's score with ration balls.
Out of 10 green ration balls.
Yes, because balls always come in a pair.
I would probably say, like, a solid 7, 7.5 even, maybe, especially for the time period.
Yeah, I was thinking 7 as well. I think for the, like, how it's aged and, you know, the effects and things like that, I would probably give it, like, a 5, as if I just sat down to watch a sci-fi movie. But the themes and the story and the acting, like, I would give it probably a 7 or 7.5 as well.
Yeah, because it very much surpassed my expectations. And again, holds up probably better than it should, so, very much.
Yeah, because I was not expecting, I mean, I have some history with this movie, but I just remember being a kid and watching it, and, like, I'm watching a weird sci-fi alien movie, and... I'm so glad that I did when I was a kid, though, because I'm so proud that this was getting into, like, my developing brain, like, this whole... Maybe that's why I didn't participate in the disgusting behavior of my school district.
Yes, it's a great thing.
Yeah, I'm like, ew. I don't think I'd really fix anything in this movie other than just, you know, modern-day updating to some things. Yeah, I think it's great. Yeah,
like I said, I think the only thing I would want is maybe just a slightly longer ending with them actually getting on the planet and seeing him being accepted. But it was still effective enough even just to see the ending shot that they had. But yeah, that's the only thing I would probably fix or add.
I agree. I would kind of like to see them standing side by side closer up and not from so far away.
Yeah, that would have been so cute because they were so cute together.
Yeah, and maybe Will meeting some of Jerry's family or something in his memory, or maybe they'd have a picture to show Zamas, because that was a big thing for Zamas, was that he didn't look like his uncle. I love that he called him uncle.
Yeah.
Because Will didn't, I mean, Will was essentially his father, but wasn't like, no, I'm your dad. Like, he honored, no, you have a parent, and I'm not your parent, but I'm your uncle. And when he's like, I'll never forget you, uncle, and it's just like, oh, my God.
So beautiful.
Oh, I know. But I would have loved to see Zamas get, a photo of his parent or something so he could see who he looked like.
Yeah.
I would have thought that'd be cool. That's how I would fix it. I would have a little bit more respect paid to the memory of Jerry at the end, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that would be cool. Do you have any fan castings for this? I kind of sprung this on you. That's more something we need to plan ahead for, but just curious if you'd recast.
I'm trying to think. Honestly, I'm having the most trouble probably recasting Dennis Quaid. I guess, name-wise, we'll just use Jack Quaid. I mean, he'd probably be good. He's a really good actor, so.
Oh, he is. I think he's cuter than Dennis Quaid.
Oh, yeah. By a lot. Dennis Quaid is many things.
Yeah, but I think Jack Quaid is so cute.
He is. I'm trying to think of someone with kind of that dad vibe that Dennis Quaid just naturally has and is so endearing. Mm-hmm. He says Chris Hemsworth. I could see, that'd be fun. I could see Chris Hemsworth doing this. And then I think for
my a lesser known Chris Hemsworth, like before he got famous.
Yes, that would be exceptional. And then I think for recasting Jerry, maybe either Michael B. Jordan or John Boyega.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I think charm. Yeah, acting Michael B. Jordan, voice John Boyega.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with those. I like that. Oh, quick little side thought. So Courtney watched this with her husband Keith. I was gonna watch it with Tyler, and then it never worked out because I have a toddler, so we were usually switching on and off. What were Keith's little reactions, his thoughts on this?
He was also very impressed by it, as far as to, I think we both went into it thinking, like, oh, this will be, like, okay. Nothing to write home about, really, but it'll be an enjoyable little space romp. I definitely didn't expect any of the effects to be that great. So, yeah, we were both pretty blown away by the acting and stuff.
Cool. And now I want a poster of this in my basement.
We both really enjoyed this film a lot, and we were blown away by the acting. Because, again, Dennis Quaid is very lovable, and he's definitely not a bad actor. I think he is a solidly good actor who occasionally will have that, like, great moment. But I definitely liked this more than probably almost anything that he's been in.
Yeah, he definitely gives it his all in this movie, like his emotion, because he, I think the mark of like a really great actor is how emotional they can get in their face without just totally overacting and being ridiculous. Yeah. And he really did a good job in this. Obviously, we talked about Louis Gossett Jr. I mean, even there's a couple times where he tears up and like he cries, but even before he cried, you could tell what he was feeling.
Oh, yeah.
And which is hard through all that makeup. And then Dennis Quaid, yeah, he did a great job being happy and, like, being, you know, angry and nervous and sad, even through the bad wig, which, you know, arguably was harder to act through than the makeup that Louis Gossett Jr. was in.
Probably.
So, just don't show him a mirror. Don't let him see what he looks like.
But yeah, how would you recast? Would you recast any other way?
Yeah, I love your ideas for Louis Gossett Jr., and I think for Will, I like the Chris Hemsworth idea if he's the lesser known. Kind of like in the new Star Trek movie, how he was the dad of Kirk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, like that kind of. Because he kind of has that, like, really polished fighter pilot look to him. And then they could grizzle him up. And I think he'd be pretty good. He wears the long hair well.
Oh, yeah. Very well.
Yeah, he just, you know, before he was so buff.
Yes.
Where you're just like, eh. Because Dennis Quaid had that really good, he looked great in this movie.
He does.
Yeah. That guy has not been living off space rats. No, he's been working out and getting lots of boiled chicken and broccoli.
He's getting swole. Space swole. Yeah.
His butt looked great in that space uniform.
He was pulling it all off, man.
Yep. Oh, no. It's getting close to 10:30. I'm getting thirsty. Gotta wrap this up. Sorry. Well, I don't really have any recommendations for you guys. Anything new. I'm introducing Calvin to the original Transformers, like Transformers the movie from 1986.
Great parenting. Good job.
Yeah. Oh, the soundtrack in that. I forgot how good the soundtrack was.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. I recommend y'all revisit that because it's fantastic. And that's the only recs I have. Courtney, do you have any recommendations for us?
I would like to recommend the show that you got me into, Titans. I just got to Beast Boy's Mansion in that show.
Noise.
And I ship every single version of Beast Boy and Raven, so I'm very much enjoying that. And then besides that, I'm just going through my like twice yearly phase of being obsessed with period pieces. So this morning I woke up with Keith and we watched Anna Karenina, which I'm going to convince you to watch really soon because it's really beautiful and the cinematography is astounding and it's on Netflix. But yeah, besides that,
I'll look that up.
Just do anything that makes you happy. You know, I recommend nostalgic things right now. I feel like I've been finding a lot of comfort in older things, watching like The Last Unicorn, Land Before Time, mm-hmm. just kind of taking myself back to the days before I knew that pandemics could really be real and happen. yeah, that's my recommendation.
Yeah, that was something I definitely got from this, was the nostalgia.
Yes.
And I felt like I was back in my grandma's Davenport, because that's what she called her couch.
The Davenport.
I always thought she called it a Davenport because she bought it in Davenport, Iowa, but apparently some people just call their couches Davenports.
Yeah, they made a joke about that on Family Guy, and my grandparents have never personally referred to stuff like that, but I have met plenty that do, and yeah, the Davenport. I don't know what it is, but it's a thing.
And the more you say that word, Davenport. Davenport.
Sounds very fancy.
It doesn't sound like a word. Yeah, and it's like, is this gibberish? Davenport. Davenport. Daven isn't a word. Port is a word.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't be a port for your Daven, because Daven's not a word. Davenport. Oh, dear. Oh, hibbly jibbly. So Davenport with your mint julep.
Precisely.
Okay. All right. I'm an idiot tonight. So
it's the quarantine, guys. It's got us. It's got us good today.
Oh, it's bad. Today was a little rough. Okay. So if you would like to contact us and tell me to stop sounding like such an idiot and going off on rabbit trails, you can email us confettipod@gmail.com. And find us on social media at ConfettiPod on Twitter and Instagram. And we are on Facebook now.
Yay!
You can find us, The Rest is Confetti, on Facebook. And I'll try to post there, because I'm not always good about it. Oh. Never.
We'll post dumb memes. I've already got some made for our movie next week, so I'm very excited.
Yes, next week. So what we're going to be doing from now on is we're going to alternate picks. So this week, Enemy Mine was my pick. And next week, we're watching Courtney's pick. Courtney, would you like to announce what we're watching?
Next week, we are watching the epic film Rubber, which Macy has never seen, but I have seen once with my husband, and I am extremely excited to watch it again, and extremely excited to hear what Macy thinks, because I think this is right up her alley.
Oh, I'm so excited. Rubber, it'll blow your mind.
It will blow your mind, though.
Yeah, so keep... checking, I lost my train of thought. Yeah, check back for Rubber next week.
Check back in for Rubber, and we will probably be drunk again, so yay.
Yes, and it is not about condoms. It's not about that.
No, it is about a psychopathic, telekinetic kind of tire.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening to all of our tangents and discussions sprinkled throughout the tangents and our little outro talking about condoms.
We appreciate you so much.
Bye.
Bye. Sounds like a really obnoxious white name.
Fragile constitution cannot handle the fearsome outdoors. Moving on from Jupiter's sphincter. Intro. Edit intro here.
Intro.
<da-da-da>.